okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Well, we're back, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. She's AV and aboard with Mr. Brendan Cornan in with us this morning, as we do every Tuesday. S&P Futures up 675. Dow Futures up 69. NASDAQ Futures up 30. Except for a big day yesterday, as we spun around from an opening down Monday, Sunday night to being up to yesterday pretty good. So there you have it, Brendan. Our young lady, AV, once in a while I catch her with a slang term, which I, of course, love to do. I mentioned it's quite a lid you had on. No, and I didn't say that to her. I would never do that. But I mentioned that she had quite the lid on this morning, and she had no idea what I was talking about. She didn't realize that was a Southside term for a hat. No.
So, I'm not sure it's just a Southside term. Probably not, I think it's more universal than that.
It might be a New York slang, too, I would think.
Yeah.
But she has.
We'll have to ask Michael Bloomberg about that.
Yeah. Is he in the New Hampshire primary?
Well, I heard the news reports this morning that he won one of the early cities. You know, there are a couple of small towns in New Hampshire which voted midnight, and then they returned the results by 12:15, 12:30. And apparently the big winners last night in these small towns were Amy Klobuchar and Michael Bloomberg.
I'm going to say that right now that would probably be the best ticket, Bloomberg and either Klobuchar or Buttigieg.
I think that's right.
And
I agree with you on that. I think that'd be a very good ticket for the Democrats.
But what are the people going to do if they don't have all day long to follow the president around and the other people? I mean, what are these guys absolutely going to do all day?
You mean members of the press?
No, the alternate press. The people run around and...
I don't know what they're going to do. They'll find something to do.
What if he just had like a Harry Truman that just sat there and like did his job? Then what? How boring would that be?
Mm-hmm. Well, boring for the press coverage, but probably a good thing for the United States.
Well, you know, maybe. So I have a question for you.
Okay.
I was looking at Trump's budget, and that, of course, is kind of sickened me. But why is this a problem? Are people in this country this freaking naive? Sprint stock up more than 60%. After report that U.S. District Judge is set to rule in favor of its deal with T-Mobile. And this was articles in like four different papers. What is with this stupid judge? How does he leak that?
I don't have an answer for you.
I mean, what is the, I mean, before I was going to say something like that, I was going to ask you, what is the normal procedure on a ruling like this?
Well, the normal procedure is that it's not released until it's given to the attorneys. And sometimes it is given to the attorneys in advance, but typically it's not. It's just released at a certain point, given to the parties, and that's when it's first released. It's not announced in advance like a press release.
All right, so should a guy like me, who, unlike my people who were writing me last weekend, say we have to go into the Pilsen neighborhood and have to pound on people's doors in the middle of the night and throw them out of here because it's the law and we have to respect the law. And I mentioned, well, I'm sure you bought some stuff on Amazon. Should I have to come pound on your door and give you a bill with, like, triple damages for ignoring the law? Well, no, you can't do that. Well, see, everybody looks at the laws that they're... Why would a guy like me who sort of likes fair trade... general principles of proper trade, or whatever the hell it was, was the overriding thing on the trading floor. If I find out one of these attorneys or their family like traded this information, what can I do to them? Drop them in the middle of the ocean or what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be a good solution, wouldn't it?
You know, it might work. Somebody traded on it. Somebody leaked it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think maybe the judge is trading it.
Maybe, but
I doubt it.
I doubt it too. They're not supposed to have any investments in anything that they're...
You're a congressman.
Good point.
Let's see. After a report in the Wall Street Journal said the U.S. District Judge is expecting to rule in the favor of T-Mobile stock, can we ever say no to one of these mergers? Is it ever possible? CNBC's Andrew Ross Sorkin also confirmed the news in a New York Times article. How do you confirm a news that isn't out there yet?
Yep. Sources.
Sources. The sources would be what? The judge's clerk? How much you have to pay him?
Well, you're right. There aren't very many people that could confirm that this is the decision. I mean, it's really probably the clerk, if the clerk is the one who's preparing the opinion, or if there's an administrative person like a secretary of sorts, if they still have those in the court systems, and the judge himself or herself.
Decision is expected to be made public Tuesday. As a Southside St. Leo sort of dude, are we immoral, amoral, or are we just... We're moral relativists today. What are we doing here?
We're relatives.
Moral relativists?
Yep.
What does that mean? What's moral for me is not moral for you? Or
that's
you?
Right. I get to choose. I get to put it in perspective.
Ah.
But it's my perspective.
Ah. That's out of the three, I'd say it's probably the worst one.
I agree with you. That is the worst one. But it seems to be the way that our country is going right now. Everything is relative.
I don't know that... was it Jefferson that said the Constitution wasn't worth squat if there was no morals behind it? One of those guys, was him or Franklin or one of those guys?
It was either Jefferson or Madison.
Might have been Madison. So, that's surely interesting. I'm not so sure I like this new world.
Mm-hmm. Right? I don't either. I'd like some more certainty, and I'd like more honesty, and I think we need more honesty.
Why are we letting this merger go through?
Why?
Yeah.
Because there are corporate interests who want to see it go through.
It's interesting. What I was doing last night, I actually got home, there was no sports on, so I said, you know what, I once in a while I talk about this era, I should have brought the book in, but it's a big book. So I actually dug into Milton Friedman's Monetary History of the United States, and mm-hmm. which is... If ever you want to, you know, it's quite the read because it's so detailed in every single year. But one of the more interesting comparisons of decades is one of the one chapters on the year, the 1876 to I think 1891, and it's 1891 to like 1910 or something, or 1909.
Wasn't there a recession in 1891?
There was one in there, and there was a panic in 1907.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting part was, in the first 15 years, essentially there was a decrease in the money supply or lack of growth all along the way as we tried step by step to go back on the gold standard after the war, and basically dragged the greenbacks and stuff and the Confederate currency out of the system. And there had not yet been the big gold rush in South Africa and, I don't know, some other place. I guess we had something here, too. So the gold was not expanding very rapidly on a worldwide basis. So there was kind of ways to get around it, and one of the ways was we started to use silver because we did have a couple silver strikes, so mm-hmm. your silver certificates, those things were based on silver, not on gold necessarily. So there was a couple of tricky ways to expand the money supply. But still, Milton Friedman says the first 15 years, the growth was stronger than it was the second 15. Even on the second 15, the money supply grew faster. So when you have growth that's just happening because of invention and things like that, matter of fact, in his opinion, the 1880s were the fastest decade of growth we ever had. Hmm. Even though the money supply was stagnant or going down, and prices were actually going down, not up.
Hmm. Interesting.
So the idea today that all you do is throw money at the thing, and immediately you have real growth. It's so half-assed wrong, and yet everybody says it all day long. I mean, this is real growth, pushing mm-hmm. the stock market up, pushing this up. It's not real growth, but it never has been. And yet, I guess if it's good for you, you know, if you own Amazon and it went up $150, it's good. It's real growth. I guess it's growth in your pocketbook, so I guess it's growth.
Let me ask you this for the current situation then. When you look at the growth in the economy over the last, say, 3 years, how do you really measure that when you look at the increase in the deficit? Aren't you really borrowing from the future to have the growth measured today?
Yes.
Okay.
Depends on who you borrow it from.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because you can have growth. Because I mean, really, let's say for instance, you didn't kick out the foreign borrowing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so if every single time the government, this is where it gets really tricky, Brian. This is what I keep trying to explain. I don't know if anybody picks up on the subtleties here. If you looked at a Keynesian system, which is what you're talking about, Keynesian meaning that you borrow money from the population, and then the federal government spends the money. Now you ask yourself, what do you really pick up on there? The only thing you pick up on is in normal times, whatever normal times are, your population is going to save, say what, 10, 15, 20% of their income. Correct?
Yeah, in a good year.
So if you go out and borrow from your population, that savings comes right to you, okay, and the federal government never saves anything.
Mm-hmm.
So they're essentially going to put that into expenditures right away, or investment or something. So you're going to pick up the little bit, you're going to accelerate the part that people normally save that you now borrow from them and you spend.
So okay, but when you're talking about borrowing, I mean, there's a difference right, between okay, selling that's treasury what, notes, and there's also a thing like lowering tax revenues because...
No, but I'm saying, in the simplest case, mm-hmm. forget the Fed. The Treasury goes out and borrows $1 million in
they sell T-notes or T-bills.
Right, and Daddy Warbucks, Brendan, writes them the $1 million check, and now you're sitting there holding a 2-year note.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so they've borrowed from you. Mm-hmm. So the $1 million they have, you don't have anymore. Correct?
Right.
So you can't spend it, they can't. So normally, you're gonna have a savings component to yours, and they're not gonna have it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so that's the simple term. So you're really not getting too far, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're gonna pick up on current expenditures, or current consumption, or demand a little bit, but not very much. Right? So the idea there is to make an investment. You build a Hoover Dam, or you build a Tennessee Valley Authority, even though they sold separate stuff for those things. You build those things, and all of a sudden now they're returning money. They can take that, the money from the project, and go and return it to you, and we're all better off. Because now we have electricity, now we have the flood control, we have everything else, plus it all works out. But now it never gets that simple. Because what ends up happening is you've got now a Fed in the middle of it. But the Fed says, wait a minute, sucking the money out of Brendan, that's not good enough. We're gonna make up some money, and Brendan doesn't have to buy all $1 million of it. We're gonna buy $500,000 of it. So now it's really made up money. So mm-hmm. now it becomes monetary policy, not fiscal policy. Fiscal policy has never done anything. It's on its own. I don't think there's ever been an instance of pure fiscal policy where the Fed didn't quote help out. In which case, now it becomes monetary policy. So right now, for the people. That whenever somebody says something, and an utterance, as my buddy Todd used to say, opens up their pie hole and says, well, the Fed has done their job, and the federal government should now start doing infrastructure, something really ignorant like mm-hmm. that. Fact is, they've got $1.2 million deficit every year. Or $1.2 trillion deficit every year. The only reason why they're hanging on to that is because the Fed is increasing their balance sheet $750 billion a year. So the Fed is floating essentially half that deficit. And they really only have to go out and borrow $250 billion, half of which they're borrowing from people overseas. So that's where it gets kind of cloudy. So, yes, I mean, if you look at a $20 trillion economy and the Fed is essentially coming up with $1 trillion a year of made-up money, that's 5% right there, right?
Right.
Well, not to mention the fact that your real growth is supposed to be all your total of all goods and services, all right, which is your GDP, minus the inflation. Because if you put enough money in to where next year your total growth of services is up 5%, and yet the inflation's 5%, and it's the exact same amount of cars, the same amount of widgets, same amount of everything is being made, you haven't gained anything.
Mm-hmm.
All you did was float, because the equation, I don't know, so it's an easy one. The economic equation that absolutely does not have, you know, it's like an identity, is your production times the price index is equal to the money supply times the velocity.
Okay. Now,
however, the velocity can change.
Because
mm-hmm. in this year I was talking about, your velocity was bigger in the first 15 years than the second 15 years. And that's how you got away with less money supply.
Mm-hmm. Well, shifting gears for a little bit.
Enough of the economics lesson.
This is like last week when we got really deep in the weeds when Mike was here.
Yeah.
Changing subject to the fact that the best words in this that you can hear this time of year is pitchers and catchers report.
Absolutely.
And today is the day where the Cubs pitchers and catchers report. Tomorrow is the day where the White Sox pitchers and catchers report.
Okay.
So I think it's a perfect time to transition out of winter, although we've had a pretty mild winter so far.
Yes.
But it's been pretty good to...
We haven't been below zero yet, have we?
I don't think we've been below zero at all this winter. You know, I bought a new park at the beginning part of the year, and I've only worn it when I went to Denver over Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I haven't worn it around here. I only wore mine once or twice.
Yeah, it's been amazing.
Let's shift gears, but I have a million questions for you regarding this Houston thing, being an attorney.
The sign stealing. Okay.
Were you listening to the radio this morning or last night?
I did not hear it last night. What's the latest?
Well, now it is. Well, first of all, all weekend. I thought I sent you some of that stuff. All weekend was the owner knew all about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and yet these people. What is with rich people that they can seemingly, absolutely, the people under them take all the hit and they don't? Where do they think they get it? How much money do I have to have before I'm immune to laws and morality?
Well,
is there a number?
It's a combination of money and connections. You know, if you know the right people, you can get by with it. And oftentimes the right people are things like the prosecutors or sometimes people like the SEC.
And how is this guy? Everybody seems to know now. There was a name for it, and people are now saying he used to ask about it.
Yeah, what was it? Codebreaker?
Yeah.
Yeah, Codebreaker was the name for the. But they're also going to try to pin this on this young intern who came up with the Excel spreadsheet to monitor all the pitches and send the signal to the players. The other thing that's really interesting to me is that the players knew about it. Apparently, the opposing teams caught on to what was going on, and they started changing their signals with the catcher and the pitcher
right
in the middle part of the game. So, I mean, it seemed like everybody knew about it. And the other thing that's really silly to me is, why do the Astros, or if proven later on, the Red Sox or other teams, you know, you've got 25 guys on this team. They're not going to stay on that team forever. So when they go, you know, you trade a guy from the Astros.
Plus everybody's tweeting. Nobody.
Yeah.
Half of them don't have a brain cell working.
That's right. But when they go to a different team, do you think they're not going to spread the word that the Astros or the Red Sox or somebody else has this system and they know what's going on?
So I'm sitting there having
just ludicrous.
I'm sitting there having a beer with Brendan, and I go, man, it sure seemed like you guys knew what I was pitching last year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we did, you big dummy. We were stealing the signs. How does that conversation not happen?
That's right. And it's not only that our third base coach was watching you and kind of figuring out what was going on. We had a guy in a camera in center field looking right at the catcher and decoding what you were doing.
You
don't think that those guys talk?
Well, now this morning, the lawsuits are flying.
Mm-hmm.
Players on the other team want to... Astros to give up their World Series share to charity or to Major League Baseball pensions.
Well, I saw an article where one of the pitchers from the Dodgers wants to sue them because his career ended.
I don't know how his career ended, but...
Well, that's his claim, that because he performed so badly against the Astros that no team wanted to hire him.
Was it in the playoffs?
Yeah. I don't remember the name of the pitcher. It was one of the Dodger pitchers. But, you know...
Yeah, he came in and he gave up like four runs, and then he never got signed by anybody, right?
Yeah. Yu Darvish could make the same argument. Look at his numbers against the Astros and the Red Sox those 2 years compared to what he had done before that.
Well, are the Red Sox in the same... They're not in the same pool here as the Astros, are they?
What do you mean in the same pool?
I mean, they're not anywhere near. The cheating was not the same, was it?
It's unclear yet. That hasn't been announced. But Alex Cora, who was the manager of the Red Sox, was the guy who instigated this at the Astros when he was at the Astros in 17. Then he became the manager of the Red Sox in 18 when the Red Sox won the World Series.
Okay.
That's why Cora was fired, because he was implicated in it. And also Carlos Beltran was fired before he even managed a game for the New York Mets, because he was a player and one of the leading players for the Astros in 17 when they won the World Series. So this is a ripple effect all the way through baseball.
You know what? I have not heard anything. Did the gamblers pick up on this?
I don't know if they did or not.
It was evident in the... It had to be evident. Although last year, the players must have picked up on it because everybody won every away game, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. In the World Series, the World Series in 2019, the visiting team won all seven games of the World Series.
All right, so the year before, the Astros won, correct?
Correct. And, no, the year before, in 18, the Red Sox won. In 17, the Astros won.
Okay, so, right. So we've got this happening, and now what do you think about the money and stuff? Should the thing be vacated?
You know, if baseball wants to be consistent in rooting out cheating, and if they say that this sign-stealing, this code-breaker system is cheating that's not acceptable to baseball, I think that they should send a message that if we're really serious about this, we vacate the titles of both. I'm not saying give it to the Dodgers for both 17 and 18, but take away the prestige, you know, put an asterisk by their name and say it's vacated for 17 and 18. And, you know, this is the same kind of an argument that Pete Rose is raising, asking for reinstatement to be eligible for the Hall of Fame because, hey, look, I just bet on games. I didn't cheat during games.
Well, I mean, it certainly calls into question, the whole, you know, Shoeless Joe, same thing.
Sure. Yeah, when you look at the White Sox or the Black Sox of 1918, they won several games, and a lot of the players played very well, including Shoeless Joe.
Yeah, what did he hit, like 350 or something?
Something like that, 380, something like that. He played a really good series, and yet he was tabbed with it. And, you know, he was a guy who had like a second-grade education, could barely write his name, and you wonder really what he understood, if anything, he said when he was interrogated by the feds and the investigators.
Well, there was a time you really need to watch, well, you don't need to, but... You should watch the movie The Natural.
I did.
I know you have. But mm-hmm. What I'm saying is the players went from town to town on the same trains as the gamblers and everybody else. They're all on the same club car together. So in that time, Mountain Landis wanted to make a massive statement.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe it was needed, maybe it wasn't. But Shoeless Joe, to me, he's almost like Barry Bonds. I mean, he was a Hall of Famer before he took his first steroid.
Yes, he was.
And I think Shoeless Joe, before this particular thing, was a shoe-in Hall of Famer.
I agree.
So that muddies the water a little bit on whether or not people, and, you know, the fact that Pete Rose, but, you know, then there's others. Steve Stone says, you know, every single rock room you walk in, they say you're not supposed to gamble on games. But we keep walking down this road.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a Ute, I think, you know, Paul Horning and those guys and a couple people got...
Alex Karras.
I think you couldn't even... they were consorting with gamblers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But now, in those eras, I mean, I've seen people 30 years ago. I saw Ricky Henderson, a bunch of people, in a casino in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could never have done that in the 60s.
Nope.
So, I mean, we're walking down this road. I mean, you have the gambling places that are advertising on baseball games and football games.
Yeah.
Hey, S&P futures up 775. Dow futures up 70. NASDAQ futures up 38. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Mr. Brendan Cornan. She is AV on the board. S&P futures are now up 10 exactly. NASDAQ futures up 43.50, Dow up 79. Individual stocks, Boeing up 233. It's like 2-3 days in a row now that Boeing is up. Plus, Microsoft goes up $3, $2, $3, $4, $5 every single day, Brennan. This is the secret monopolist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody else misbehaves, so people just totally... I mean, I can't believe I still have to pay these idiots for office, and there's no competition, and I don't know. I just... Whatever. We need somebody to reread the Sherman Act, but we don't have anybody who's willing to do that, doesn't appear.
You also have to look at the very top right now. So what's going on? This is not really an administration or
priority,
Department of Justice or that has the priority of things like the Antitrust Act.
Oh, if you're bigger, you're better. DAX up 105.8%, FTSE up 59.8%, CAC run up 23%. Only 0.4% there over in Asia. Nikkei down 142.6%. Shanghai up 11. That's 0.4%. Hang Seng making back what it's lost the last couple of days. Up 342, 1.2%. Bonds 1.58. That's up four basis points. So we're creeping back up a little bit there. 1.38. 10-year Japanese still minus 0.05. So they're kind of nowhere as near zero like they were. Oil up 97 cents. 50.54 still in this range. Brent up 111, 54.38. They're up a buck to the same spot they were 2 days ago, Brennan. So get a load of this. Natural gas, 175. Wow. RBOB, 153. Then we've got gold. It's down $7, 15.72. It's either hanging here, ready to fall, or it's forming a base. One or the other. Gold inches lower as new coronavirus cases dip. And people, we have no concept of whether we're getting the truth or not. So
they dip.
The new cases evidently. It must have dropped from the day before. Not as many new cases.
Well, it was like there's no new cases. That happened over the weekend too, and then the next day it was like double what it was before.
You don't want to, when the market's going up, and people are looking for a reason to buy. You don't want to bring those facts into the story, Brennan. You should know. AV, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports? Not much sports.
No. Good morning. It's 37 past the hour. 29 degrees right now in Chicago. A mix of sun and clouds during the day and overcast skies in the evening. No rain or snow expected. The high of the day is 34 and the lowest is 29. 49 degrees currently in Phoenix. Rain showers early in the morning, switching to a cloudy afternoon, and clear skies expected by night. Might get lightly windy later at night. The highest is 59 and the lowest 42. And we have a few accidents reported. First accident is on Eisenhower West before Mannheim Road. Left lane is blocked.
It'll be Mannheim.
Expect delays up to 10 minutes if you're heading west through Eisenhower. Another accident on Eisenhower again, but eastbound before Racine Avenue. Right lane is blocked, which causing delays up to 10 minutes. And one more accident on Lake Street at Des Plaines reported at 6:03 a.m. in the morning. No details on that. Chief?
Let's see, poor AV, we do have some pretty interestingly hard to pronounce names of roads, don't we?
Yeah.
You never, Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. How you doing on this Tuesday morning?
I'm doing fine, except I have a decision to make.
Decision time. What kind of decision?
You
gonna propose to Audrey?
God no. I'd be proposing to anybody else, you know, so it's not like it's that kind of decision. It's not like
you're gonna have a kid out of wedlock.
If I had a kid, that would be interesting right about now. Especially for her. we're past that stage, I think, but you never know with the modern medicine, I guess.
You know, there was a thing in law school that when you're talking about estate planning and things, which was referred to as the fertile octogenarian.
Yeah.
You never assumed that a woman could not have children. Even if it was medically impossible, for legal purposes, there's still a possibility of having a fertile octogenarian.
I guess. But Kevin was wondering if I should, as you've been talking about, Michigan is now a basketball school, how they're now officially doing worse than the Irish.
Well, it's funny. I was going to talk Michigan basketball this morning.
Well, good. Go right ahead.
I'm kind of turning the corner on a little bit of optimism.
Well, we are on the Irish a little bit, too. They're not as bad as we thought. if that's optimism.
Well, this is Juwan's first year, right?
Yep.
So he has to, work out the kinks a little bit. Hate to use the injury card, but our best player, Isaiah Livers, who may be a lottery pick, was hurt twice. He came back, and we played really well against State. We are going to be in Welsh Ryan Arena tonight to play at Northwestern, and we're 8 deep, and we got 2 6'10" guys coming off the bench, and I think that's going to be hard to defend. So I'm upping my projections for the team, and I think Sweet 16 or Elite 8, if Livers can stay healthy. You should check him out. He's 6'6", 6'7". He can drive. He can shoot three-pointers, plays great defense. And I think Juwan's, learning on the fly. So I am upgrading Michigan basketball here. I'm excited. Had a great time at the game on Saturday with my wife and daughter. And I don't know. It may have turned the corner. You don't want to peak too early in sports. You know that, Chief. And we certainly have it. So I like the way we're looking now going into mid-February.
So you are coming to Chicago this weekend, is that what you're telling me?
No. Michigan plays at Northwestern tonight.
Oh, all right. So you're not. All right.
I'm not coming.
I'm saying if you were there, we should.
Let's just say you'll go to the game with me, and then, I'll hop in the car and I'll make it there. I've been there. I used to go to that game every year when I lived in Chicago for 7 years. I felt like I was in a high school gym there at Welsh Ryan Arena.
Well, it's all remodeled. I haven't been in it since it's remodeled. I remember I was in it before it was remodeled either, so I guess that's easy.
Yeah, no, it's a fun place to play.
What,
I mean, like, literally, I haven't been there since they remodeled it, but you're literally sitting on a bleacher, you know, just right on the court. But we'll see what happens. They got to win tonight, and they got to win at home Indiana on Sunday, Alumni Day, so that should be fun.
Well, the Irish only have 8 guys, like, total on scholarship that are playing. They got 2 guys.
Injuries?
They got 1 guy hurt, and they got 2 guys that have transferred that are going to sit out the year. And then, what's his name? Brace swung and missed on every freshman. The only one after 3, and all 3 of them said, up yours. So you got nobody.
Well, you know, the other thing that's interesting is, number 1, Baylor. I haven't really seen them play. Number 2 is Gonzaga. Gonzaga has 1 loss this year, and who do you think that's to?
It was Michigan, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's when they had Livers. They got off, you know, they got off to a really hot start. They were a little underrated. Then I think they got a little overrated. And, you know, now they're coming back to the median. And also a sentimental favorite for me, number 4, San Diego State, undefeated, coached by Brian Dutcher. He was the former assistant to Steve Fisher when they won the national championship. So good to see San Diego State 24-0.
Well, my buddy Billy over at the series was all ecstatic last night that on Bobby Knight's big return, Purdue kicked in to get his ass. He was happy as a clam. With Bobby Knight 20 years the other night, they finally went back there. He was so pissed off at him for finally.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
I did not see that.
Yeah, but Purdue played Indiana, and I guess it wasn't really close, was it, Brendan? It was like 10 points. I'm not sure, but it was pretty good thumping, I think.
Yeah, I just saw the article that Bobby Knight went back there after, and it was the first time he was back in Indiana or in Indiana University in 20 years.
Where did he go after that? Was it Texas Tech or someplace?
Texas Tech. He was a Red Raider.
Yeah.
And all right, Joel, we don't have that much time. What about two things? What about the market? What about Iowa? They're kind of a surprise team with a couple people hurt.
Yep. Good coach there. Purdue, you can't sleep on Matt Painter either, but Bobby didn't hurl any chairs across the court, right?
No, but
he behaved.
No, and he didn't attack any police officers either.
He yelled something like play defense when he left the court or something.
Or did he try and choke anybody?
No, he was. I knew a couple guys.
Or hit his kid.
I used to play ball with a couple guys that went to Indiana and left. They couldn't stand it. They couldn't stand the guy.
You know, back in the good old days, you could yell and scream. I mean, that was just normal coaching. And now, you know, everyone gets a participation award.
Well, but the people I played ball with, they said if you're going to be an NBA player, it's worth sticking it out because he would make you better. He said if you just like to play ball, you know, the wind sprints, everybody had their own bucket to puke in and that kind of thing. Because they got old real fast. You know, he said I mean, and these guys love, because I love to play basketball. I want to play college basketball someplace. And obviously I'm willing to get in shape, but this is over the top. This is all about him. And, you know, and been breaking people down, and I don't think you'd really need to do that.
How's DePaul doing?
They were the flash. They won like, I don't know how many for their first 10 games.
They were like 10-1 at the beginning of the season.
They
went to the Big East games and
they're 1-10 in the Big East?
Yep.
They've lost everybody.
The only team they beat was Butler, which was ranked number 5 at the time.
Yeah, and then they've lost everybody else. Getting worse.
Wow, you're right.
Huh. All right, Joel, we only got a minute. What about this market?
What about it, Chief?
We're just going to keep.
We are in a super blow-off pop here. Overcame the virus scares and greener skies ahead. I couldn't have been more wrong when I was on the last week or last 2 weeks. Can't fight the Fed, can't fight the market, new all-time highs, no resistance. No resistance until there is resistance.
So how many days in a row can Microsoft go up $3? Like 30?
It's up 241 now at 191.15. I mean, they blow away earnings every time, so until they stop doing that.
One of the guys was on CNBC the other day, and if you saw him, said in all his, he's one of these, you know, total fundamental nerds kind of guy, which makes him good, not bad. I'm just not saying anything bad about the dude. He said never in his studies have of a rally year like this been 95% multiple expansion and 5% earnings increase?
You know, if you know, people that are fearing, you know, any you know, aftermath from the, you know, the virus, I mean, that's not going to show up till next quarter, if there is any. So, you know, people are looking for an immediate impact on the market. Some companies, I know Under Armour came out today and said that. So, you know, if there's going to be any kind of impact, it will be next quarter. It's not going to be this quarter.
Well, thank you very much, bud.
Go Blue.
Yeah, go Blue. And, AV, do we have Kenny?
No, I'm going to try him again.
All right, we'll give him a shot. Meanwhile, Brendan and I can... So we'll talk a little bit more about... Where do you think this thing lands?
Which thing, the Houston Astros?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, I mean, you think the other players are going to get some of the money out of them? And
no, I don't. I don't see how you could prove that. Even a pitcher like you, Darvish, or the other reliever who claims his career ended because he was treated so badly by getting hit so hard against the Astros, there are too many other variables to say that that's the reason that he no longer plays baseball. I think it'll blow over. I think many people will say, hey, that's baseball. For years and years, there are guys who were coaches who stole signs, and they would read the gyrations of the third base coach and kind of understand the situation. Is it going to be a bunt? Is it going to be a hit and run? So I think that this is par for the course, and I think it'll blow over in a while. The unfortunate thing is, there was an article in the Tribune about this the other day, that the people who, for the field people who are paying the price of this, when you look at this, a lot of them are Puerto Rican.
All right, well, let's table this for a second. Rumor has it we have Mr. Kenny Polcari.
Hey, how are you?
All right, buddy, how are you?
I'm good.
You're just happy that your Microsoft goes up $3 a day.
Microsoft's in the market like it never wants to end, as if the world is never going to have a down day again.
Well, I was talking the other day, Kenny, about the Fed. Well, last week was starting to flatten out. They weren't going as crazy as they were 4 or 5 weeks ago, and all of a sudden now 1 week of Chinese putting money in, and they're right back up. They popped the money supply everything again last week. I mean, they're right on it. I mean, and what the Chinese ended up with, what, $250 billion?
Yeah, in the system. Because as they try to explain and provide stability for what's happening over there, right?
Right, and we've got the situation with Boeing now. All of a sudden, it's running up every day. Everybody must be hinting that. I don't see how this thing. Well, I'll tell you what, Kenny. I always suspected I want to be a monopolist, but now I really do. If these guys are gonna piss away, I'm probably at the $25 billion number on this 737 thing, and everybody's saying a year from now it's not going to make any difference. How much money do these guys make?
Did you see the latest headline the other day with this? There was another problem with the software that they need to fix that apparently no one ever knew about either.
Yeah, I saw that. That could be a big problem, bigger problem for them.
Yeah, but I understand it could be a big problem, but was there any real reaction in the stock? I don't think there was. I mean, it might have been initially just that one day, but I think the market was weak anyway, so it gave it an excuse. But look what's happening. They keep taking it higher and higher and higher, yet every time you turn around, there's another problem with the technology, the computer software that flies these planes, which should be a real concern.
I've never been a pilot, but I really thought, Kenny, me being the dunce that I am about this, that at the end of when this thing first went in and there was a problem with this thing where they were turning the autopilot on essentially too soon, I really thought the fix was going to be something like, hey, you idiots, fly it up to 20,000 feet on yourself and then turn it on. Yet obviously, it's way more than that. I mean, it has to.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe the software is much more ingrained in the system than I ever thought it was. Or something. It must be there's my, but something is. They keep uncovering all this stuff. I mean, how much of this stuff is software? How much do people fly these days? I thought these things were still.
I actually think the bulk of it is a software problem. I don't think it's the physical design of the plane, unless I've missed something. But I think it's the software that has gone wrong. That new the computer system that controls all the systems. I think that's really the issue. Am I wrong?
A little bit.
Other than that one conversation about they moved the engine closer to the body or close further out in the wings, it creates that potentially was a question about the design. But I think everything else we're hearing about is about the technology that runs the plane.
Actually, I think you might be wrong, Kenny, on that. When I say wrong, the gauge that feeds that thing that caused the problem, it was a single point of error. There was only one gauge, and they said that's a serious design flaw. There needs to be more than if one gauge goes out, the plane's not supposed to crash. That particular part had been rebuilt by the place in Florida or something. The thing that picked up the airspeed on the outside. It was some kind of a gauge up underneath where the pilot sits outside, but it was a single point of whatever you want to call it, information,
failure.
Or whatever that.
Right.
And they said, and I think they're making that a double or triple of some kind. So that's a hardware fix, I believe, leading into the software, because then the software has to read more than one gauge, and maybe before it starts maneuvering the plane around.
Well, what's the difference between the gauge on that plane, that same gauge on that plane, and gauge on their other plane? It's got to have the same gauge on the other plane, right?
I don't think that the other planes, the thing takes over like this does. It does. No. Something was
so
weird.
Again, it comes down to the at some point, the software takes over.
Well, everybody's reading all these articles. The one I read was they wanted to put the same thing, the same system into the 767 tankers. And the guy who was designing it says, no, we don't want that system here. It basically sucks.
Right.
So they're not in the tankers, but they're in this thing. So there's some combination there, Kenny, if Lou was here, he probably could be a lot smarter about it than me, but there's some combination of software and mechanical, because there was a single point of failure on that gauge. Because remember, you have to remember some story about the thing was rebuilt in Florida or someplace by some rebuilder. Why the thing was already being rebuilt and the plane's only a year old, I don't know. That seems to sound a little flaky too, right? I mean, if such an important part, you would think it would last a little longer than that, but it did not. I was mentioning to Brennan that last night I don't know, for whatever reason, I picked up the monetary history of the United States because I've been mentioning a little bit about the post-Civil War years. I started reading some of that, Kenny. It's pretty interesting because what I've been trying to mention the last few weeks is even though you can add to the gross economy by putting more money in the system, you never create wealth by putting money in the system. And for everybody. I mean, you can drive up stock prices and those people will benefit versus other people, but you can't.
Well, and that's the whole Democratic argument, right? Is that the economy's not working, right? It's working for some, but not all of us.
Right.
And there's the argument.
Well,
are they right or are they wrong? I don't know. Unemployment's at a 50-year low. Wages are rising. You know, more people coming back into the workforce based on the latest FBI said numbers are plus 50, which is expansionary mode. PMIs are around the world are starting to go that way. Certainly in Europe, they're still below 50, but they're trending up, which is a positive. So you know, there's a disconnect for me in terms of, is the economy working for everybody or is it not? Because I think certainly people are working and they're putting money away. I guess the argument is some people have to work two and three jobs to make ends meet. I guess that's where it gets, you know, we can get argumentative about that.
Well, I think one piece maybe you can take away from me and feel free to use it. it's not like it's proprietary. The numbers have been so skewed for so long, Kenny, in the sense that in the last like 20 years, a huge section of the population has not had any real income growth. And while other things, like your college education, your medical stuff, all that stuff is gone.
Skyrocketed.
Even though, you know, we're not going to get a Republican Democrat thing, but the increase in some of the wages you see this year at the low end are almost all due to, well, not in some areas, not others, because there is a demand for those jobs. Almost all increase in the minimum wage, which the conservatives don't like anyway. So what I'm saying at this point, if you give the person who's making $10, $12 an hour even a 10% raise, it sounds spectacular. But it, right. it's like you and me going over and peeing and flooding Lake Michigan. I mean, it's like,
right.
I mean, those things, to just to catch up with a lot of things, the education, the taxes and everything, needs almost like double in 1 year. I mean, just to get people back on a plane where they were 20 years ago. I mean, I hope the rest of the country is not as bad as Illinois. But the amount of people that Audrey and her friends are selling homes for, and because the taxes are up, even the price of the homes is down like 20 grand in the last couple of years because the taxes are now a bigger chunk of the mortgage.
Well, you tell me about it. Certainly in the Tri-State area, which is, you know, we can have that conversation too once you hit the, once he did the tax reform package and he wiped out those deductions for state and local taxes and state income taxes, you know, housing prices have certainly gotten readjusted, we should say, although they say they're coming back, but I don't see them coming back strongly in the Tri-State area just because there's that ongoing issue. And in New York, it's such a high-tax state, it becomes a much bigger issue.
Well, and you also get to the point where when you start fighting about the taxes, and now the president... You know, and again, he knows, he has a sixth sense for what his people want to hear. And yet, if you actually read through what the guy says, I mean, he's so dangerous, it's scary. He's talking about lowering middle class taxes and getting his whatever hairdo elected again. Yet he also wants to cut Medicaid and something else. Okay, so if you dump that back on the states, once you get past the top, I won't say 1%ers, but the top 10%ers, most of your taxes are involved in payroll taxes, state taxes, and city taxes.
Right.
So when you go to, you know, your panels on CNBC, and everybody talks about taxes as if the only tax there is the income tax, you're talking about a bunch of 1%ers sitting there. Because for most people, that tax is nothing compared to the other ones. Right. So all you're really doing is shoving this back to the states, in which case they raise it. Well, you go from a progressive person paying it, as little as progressive as it is anymore, to back to a totally regressive. So you're just, all you're doing is shoving the, as we used to say when we were kids, Kenny, you squeeze a silly putty on one end, it pops out on the other, right? I mean, it never goes anywhere. It's still silly putty. Do you think anybody else remembers silly putty? My mother wouldn't let it in the house because it was the only thing she couldn't get out of the rug.
Well, you could make copies of the comic strips with those.
Yeah.
Would show the colors in the comic strips.
Remember that, Kenny?
Yeah, do you remember? Do you remember that? Hey, listen, I'm going to be on CNBC today at like 1:20-ish, 1:15, right after the Powell testimony in front of the Hill today.
Yeah.
Talking with Steve Leisman and Joe Lavogna and Kelly Evans about the implications, what was said, what was said versus what the market expected. So it'll be an interesting conversation.
Well, be radical, will you, for us?
All right.
Don't be like Pedro when he asked he asked Janet Yellen regarding the people front running her announcements, and she wouldn't let him back anymore. Don't do that.
Yeah, no.
Take care, buddy. We will listen. We will listen. S&P futures up 10.25, NASDAQ futures up 42. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But if you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty and the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes, have you been frustrated by the lack of income your investments have provided? If you have answered yes to either of these questions, then we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. So please give me a call at 602-298-1278, 602-298-1278, so that I can explain further the benefits that PTI can offer you and your portfolio.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howley. Mr. Vernon Cornan. We also have Mr. Jeff Joseph back from Luckbox Magazine. We've had Mike Hart the last couple of weeks. We have Jeff back. We also have AV on the board. SP Futures up 975, 10 bucks. Back and forth, 975, 10. I'm going to say it's 975 bid at 10, if I were to make a market. NASDAQ up 42. Jeff, before we dig in a whole bunch of other stuff that you kind of brought with, what is your opinion on the Houston sign stealing regarding the owner now being involved and all these other players wanting to sue to get money back and put the money into the Major League Pension Fund? Do you think that's got any legs or no?
Yeah, I think it does. But, well, first of all, good morning. Good to be back with you guys. Yeah, you know, I can't say that I have a full grasp of what its potential is, but only because there's such precedent for the leagues to sit on these stories. I mean, look at Brady's story with Inflategate. You know, they have such a natural tendency to kind of squash any squashy stories. It'll be interesting to see if any investigative reporting will flush it out even more so. But I think it does have legs. Yeah.
Well, so what do you think this guy who got canned from New York? They, by the way, they don't have a manager yet, Brendan. It could be us.
That's right.
And who's got Dusty Baker? Dusty Baker's like 90. He went where? Houston?
The Houston Astros signed him as their manager.
Jesus.
to clean up the atmosphere down there.
Oh, okay. Well, Dusty's pretty straight, I think.
He is.
So, yeah, he might be able to do that. But it's so where does this leave other guys, Jeff? Where does this leave Pete Rose? Where does it leave Shoeless Joe? Where does it leave the steroid guy?
At least it means that there's a movie contract coming their way. In each of those instances. But, you know, they're saying that baseball may never recover, but, God, you know, baseball.
They'll recover.
Right.
They recovered from the steroid era.
That's right.
They recovered from throwing the World Series in 1919. Mm-hmm. They'll recover from this.
Yeah. Plus, it's a new normal for baseball just to have smaller audiences. We're seeing it across all major sports. Seeing it across all entertainment. Look at the numbers for the Oscars, how they were down. We've seen a couple years of, well, several years now, declining handles at live NFL events, and you're seeing it across MLB as well.
I have a question for you guys regarding...
I think we have a new normal in entertainment and sports.
Question regarding the Oscars. My buddy Dr. J, for years and years, has had like a Super Bowl party, and then he has an Oscar party. Same people. Just go over and watch it. Everybody brings stuff. It's no major deal, right? Everybody brings a dessert and an appetizer and some wine, and you sit there and watch the stuff. I've never remembered them being back-to-back. They've never been back-to-back.
No. What a couple weeks we've had, right?
Yeah, but I'm saying, I'm gonna say John didn't have his party. Yeah. He just had us idiots over last week. He wants to see us 2 weeks in a row. I mean, I'm going to say that part of the drop-off in viewership was the date.
Although it's been a natural trend, I saw that 10 years ago the Oscar viewership was just shy of 41 million, and it was it's 29 million as of the broadcast yesterday or 2 days ago. So that's a big fall off.
Well, the idea of not having a host, I think, is insane.
Well, who wants to be a host?
Well, but a lot of people do. I mean, they have
also takes up more time.
Well, a little bit, but I mean, at least then you have somebody who can. I mean, a lot of people like to listen to Johnny Carson all night or Oprah. Some of those people are pretty talented.
Yeah, but
so
they
bring
have to
back Johnny Carson.
Twitter history. Yeah, they have to eliminate their entire Twitter history to be a candidate for that.
Well, we don't seem to know where we're going. We're just talking about, in your opinion, what did we say earlier, Brendan? We're talking about this. I don't know if you were watching last night the stock reports. Sprint stock is up 40% after. Report got out of the judge about his ruling without any announcement yet. So who the hell leaked that, and how much money did they make?
And should that deal go through? What do you think?
Well, I don't like to say, if there's never another merger in 5 years, I'd be happy.
Yeah, how about it? Right.
But now the point is, are we three? Well, I guess we could make it four. We are A, immoral, B, amoral. Three or C would be everything, moral relativism. You choose your own morals. Or D, none of the above. I mean, how does anybody not have a problem with this thing leaking and the stock up 40% without any announcement from a judge? I mean, who leaked it? His clerk?
You're going down the old road of the reporter on the street asking the guy walking down the street, with all the problems in the world, do you think it's due to ignorance or apathy? He goes, I don't know, and I don't care.
Yeah. I mean, did you guys get the heads up at Luckbox that this ruling was already in?
No, but we've gotten some different inside information lately that's been kind of interesting.
Any of it been any good?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. We had inside information that that Buttigieg was likely to win that the vote was being held back because he was likely to win and that his performance was going to be much, much higher than anticipated. And then that inside information was validated in the trading going on in the prediction market at predictit.org. It was there's prediction markets at predictit.org. I think we talked a little bit about this a couple weeks ago. It is a legal online prediction market that you can wager on political outcomes. It operates under an exemption letter from the CFTC. It allows you to spend up to $850 per contract within a market. So a market may be who's going to win the Iowa caucus, and it will list the 5-6 candidates. They'll trade as binary options between 1 cent and a dollar. You can trade in and out. Those Those cents represent a percentage. So, for example, if Buttigieg was trading at 40 cents, that would equivocate a 40% probability based on the participants in that prediction.
So that's just for him being number one in that primary.
Yeah, so we had, and we recently started a podcast, which I mentioned to you on the break, on this, on political trading. It's called The Political Trade, and it's available wherever you find your podcast, The Political Trade. But our first guest made over 380% last year on the prediction markets. Those were audited numbers. We saw his actual performance numbers. And in a conversation that we had with him, he said, well, we're hearing from Iowa that Buttigieg is likely to win this thing. This was when Buttigieg was at 22 cents, meaning 22% probability. And sure enough, within 5 hours, we saw that thing start railing because it's an unregulated market and things leak out. So this wasn't meant to be, well, it was meant to be a plug, but it goes back to what you said earlier that, you know, wherever there's information, there's inside information. And when you have a non-regulated market, somebody's going to take advantage of it. Now, you're talking about a regulated market, like the securities market,
right,
where somebody obviously is jumping on the sprint. The sprint news.
I sure hope if it's a judge's clerk, the idiot got paid for it.
Well,
you just give it to somebody.
What? I suppose some relative somewhere made some money.
You know, if you'd have been alive earlier, you're too young. Your buddy Milton Friedman, of course, now again, when people say things like this, you have to recognize the time and how trading took place. And this is back when trading was all open outcry, and you got to trade, you saw the person you traded with, right?
Yeah.
He said, "Don't even waste your time with insider trades. People will police it themselves." If you traded on the CBOE, if Brendan's firm was some sleazebag firm that had the fast money, I'll use that term.
Now wait a minute.
I mean, if you know, and all of a sudden Brendan runs in 1 month IBM 5 minutes before the earnings and makes the right call, the next month I'm going to trade with him because we know it's Brendan. And he knows this pattern starts to pick up, and people are pretty good on these patterns, right? But now in an electronic world, there's no way you can police that, because the only people that can police it are the SEC if they feel like it. And they only seem to police it for people they don't like, which is, you know, I'll say that on national TV, I don't care, because that's the way they are.
Well, I find that really interesting, Chief. So I looked it up while you're talking about it, and sure enough, it says that Nobel Prize-winning economist Milton Friedman himself noted that you want more inside trading, not less. He argued that it will give people most likely to have knowledge about deficiencies of the company of an incentive to make such deficiencies known. So it's kind of like the SAS Sunstein, you know, let the sunshine.
But I don't. But if he would have saw everybody be able to do this anonymously, I'm not so sure how do you police it?
Yeah, it's the sunshine is the best disinfectant,
right,
kind of approach. It's an interesting approach.
I like the way you checked up on me, like you didn't trust me or something.
Well, I find that interesting.
No, it's not just not trusting you. It's just verification. Trust but verify.
But I mean, but something coming out of a court, something coming out of a judge's decision, I don't think Uncle Milty would say that should leak, because that's a binary event.
Sure.
You know,
of course.
Right. And I don't think he would have. I mean, his point was if every month the vice president of finance of IBM would even have such a thing. Now they're just CFOs, right?
Right.
Yeah, they used to be VP of finance. Would actually, you know, give his buddies the nod. It just would pick up earlier. First guy might catch something, but it'll just the numbers would move so fast that they wouldn't get anywhere.
Well, it gets to the question of does the market know before the news, or does the news know before the market? So with this first podcast, I shared it with a friend of mine who runs the news at Disney. I won't say what region of the country, because it was a confidential conversation. But he, for one-fifth of the country, runs news for ABC. And he listened to the podcast. I gave it to him just to give back feedback, because he's kind of a political geek and a probability junkie, and that really is what that podcast is about.
It doesn't make him bad, you know?
No, it's all good. And there was this guest who came on that's made so much money in the prediction markets that was basically giving his tips of trading, basically said, forget about watching the news. If you're watching the news to make your trading decisions off of in political markets, it's too late, because by the time it hits the the prediction markets know before the news knows. Now, he took real exception to that, and he said, well, that's absolutely ridiculous. The prediction markets don't know before the news, you know, knows anything. The news knows first, and then the prediction markets respond. And I think that's just kind of the insular attitude of the media, thinking that they're first and foremost.
Well, what do you think... Now, would Buttigieg, when his stock started to go up, did one particular person start to go down or everybody? Seems like he took the chunk out of Elizabeth Warren, it seems to me. But again, I'm not looking at the numbers, you are.
He's taken a chunk out of Warren, and he's taken a chunk out of Biden.
Biden.
Okay, well, Biden, yeah, too.
Even more so.
Where was Biden? Yeah. Biden just
Warren and Sanders, they've been trading votes, and Sanders won that in a big way. He took Warren's votes over the last 3 weeks, but Buttigieg is taken from Biden.
It's interesting to me, though, that Sanders is kind of like Trump. I mean, you look at the numbers
Very
for Trump,
so.
And it's 42%, 43%, 44%. It doesn't range much more than that on the high end or the low end. And Sanders followers are very, very strong followers of him, but he's in the same range. You know, when you're looking at the Democratic numbers, 22 to 25% of a larger field. Now, I'm sure those numbers will go up as the field winnows, but he's got the hardcore vote and not really going much beyond that. And when he does, he's taken a little bit away from Warren. But you look at the numbers in Iowa, and he didn't improve that much. Even on the second round, he went up like 2 or 3%, and Buttigieg went up 8 or 9% in the second round numbers. Not enough to quite catch Bernie, but he came pretty close in as the second candidate.
Yeah, but the irony of the Iowa caucus format is that it favors the second choice.
Mm-hmm.
The irony for Sanders is that he did win the popular vote in both the first and second round, yet he's not going to win the delegate position, coming out of there.
Mm-hmm.
So today the morning consults poll came out, which is one of the more highly regarded polls nationwide, and it has Bernie in the lead at 25% nationally and Biden at 22%.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
and guess who's number three? Bloomberg at 17%.
Yeah.
All right, so how the hell does... somebody do a poll today.
How does somebody do a poll today? Nationally or?
Anyway, any poll. I was a little bit of a statistician in college, and we studied polling. Mm-hmm. And how the hell do you do a poll today?
Well, I don't know how morning consult is done. I do know that the CNN poll and the Harris polls and Gallup polls are still done via phone.
Okay.
But
flawed.
Of course, yeah. It's based on who you reach, but I don't know how morning consults polls are done.
Just to give a 15-second decide. excuse me about how you're supposed to do it. If you can take a poll of 10 million people with 200 people, if you do it right, but doing it right. Means you go to a random number table. Does anybody know what that is? Or somehow do a random. You probably get your computer to generate. But you have to find an entire 200 people. You can't go to Jeff's house. He's not home. Talk to the guy next door. The reason why he's home, maybe he's out of a job and you're not. You can't talk about the guy across the street. You can't talk about the guy in Michigan Avenue. They're not the same guy walking down Halston Street. You've got to get those people. And I'm curious as how the hell they do that today.
Yeah.
Who even answers their phone anymore?
Yeah.
Well, it was always really hard. It was never easy.
Right.
But sure. people will take the guy next door. Remember the Three Stooges with the census, where the guy's at home and they go get the guy on the sidewalk? No, that's not what you're supposed to do.
Well, you raise the point, and this is what I spent my morning on this morning, because we are, you know, actively following these prediction markets. They're fascinating because they are markets, so they trade like options. It's all about probability, and it's all about politics. So if people like the intersection of all that, the prediction markets at predicted.org are really, really fascinating, and that's why we began this podcast based solely on that, the probability. It's called the political trade, and it's all about that. So this morning, the morning consult poll comes out, and exactly to your point, the first thing I did was look at what the prediction market at predicted.org says, and if you look under 2020 Democratic nominee, if you look at that market, There, 45% have mm-hmm. Bernie Sanders, and Bloomberg is in second at 26%. Mm-hmm. Those are the binary option prices. You know, Bernie sells for 45 cents, and Bloomberg sells for 26 cents. So if you are a statistical trader, right away you see some stat arb. You see a material right. difference between...
It's very similar when the line comes out on Sunday night in football.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's what the opportunity is to go short, you know, the different... So Bernie would be a short based on the prediction market's value if you value the poll data, and you would... because there's material differences in each one of these instances between how they're polling and what the prediction markets are telling you.
I run by you guys, because you guys are obviously people I can knock these crazy ideas off of. This one's, I don't think it's all that crazy, though. In our lifetime, certainly in mine and Brendan's, when you ran for office, this is a simplified version. If you were on the left, you skittered over to the, I'll use the term crazy left, got your checks and hightailed it back to the middle as best you could.
Mm-hmm.
Same way if you were the right, you went to the rednecks and then you came back the other way. Hmm. You know, it'd be the tree huggers to the rednecks, and then you'd come back in the middle. And Clinton was probably the best at that. He could get a check from you and 40 seconds later forgot all about you and went right back to somewhere. He had absolutely no morals about taking money from you.
Well, I would say he's met his match in somebody else who's currently in office.
Well, but he didn't get that much, take that much money from people initially. So there's a slight difference there. But Bush, on the other hand, actually believed that if he took money from somebody, like, he had to start a war for him and he had to cut taxes for him. But my point was that's how politics has worked really most of the years of my life. And now all of a sudden, the Trump phenomenon.
There was a lot more integrity back then.
Well, I'm saying the numbers were different. You figured that the votes were in the middle, even though the money was on the edges. But now Trump is very happy. I mean, he'd rather have more, but he's very happy to go to battle, meaning the electoral day, with 25 to 30% of the people in his pocket, and that he can count on. And at the other part, he figures, okay, especially if I'm running against a Hillary or a Bernie Sanders who don't seem to know how to add, or people like that. He goes, I'm going to get 20% of the rest of the people just because they don't like him as much as they don't like me. And that puts me to 50 and I'm in.
I disagree with that. I think the analysis that he found worked with him in 2016.
I don't think he found it. I think it just worked.
Well, my point is that where he found it was in the Electoral College votes, not in the general population votes, because he lost that by 3 million. And there was a huge differential in the large population states, with the exception of Texas. And, you know, Florida was a toss-up. But most of the big states, and where he won was the fact that, you look at Montana, Wyoming, Alabama, Mississippi, relatively small population states, but the number of electoral votes that they added up to. I mean, that was the same approach that Barack Obama took in 2008 when he was running for the Democratic nomination. He went to Iowa and he picked off the small counties to get the delegate counts and the votes up and won the state.
Right.
And people weren't, because Clinton was looking at Des Moines and the big cities and where she had her organization. Obama and David Plouffe, his campaign director, went to the smaller counties. Likewise, in 2016, it was the smaller, hardcore Republican states that had small amounts of electoral votes that put Trump over the top. Now, you can focus on Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan, but they wouldn't have mattered if some of the smaller states didn't go the way that they did for Trump.
You're on way too cerebral on me. What I'm saying here is that both Trump and Bernie are happy to walk into the polls in November with 30% of the people and just figure out of the other 40, 21% is going to hate the other guy more than me. That's a difference. That's a difference I'm seeing that in my era that would never work. But now, I think Trump is happy to go with 30% and figure nobody likes his Bernie guy. I'll get another 20 out of someplace. I don't know from where. Well, same way with Hillary. I mean, you're right. He didn't get the popular vote, but I would never have voted for Hillary. Trump didn't get my vote, but if it was only the two of them there, he might have.
Well, the irony of all that is that, don't you see that playing out right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly my point.
So when you're looking at Bernie Sanders as the anti-Trump, who's gonna dissuade more people from showing up to vote?
Right.
Well, but I'm saying the middle has become a non-entity, gutless, in many ways, both in terms of legislation, but in a lot of ways, the middle class is not being heard and they're not speaking.
But the middle is going to decide this election again right now.
But not in any forceful way. They are, but not in any way to get some anywhere. You know what I'm saying? Not in any way where
that's a whole other question as to where we ever get, right? I have a friend who's pretty astute politically, who's absolutely convinced that it doesn't matter at all who's president. And he's a real buzzkill to talk to because you can't even engage in these conversations because he says it just doesn't matter.
Well, sure it does.
Which is I agree with you. That's a very fatalistic.
Show that guy a list of the last 100 judges that these guys have put in and tell me it doesn't make any difference.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's right.
But we had two guys, talking about Southside. So
how does it happen that the Democrats, with all this time, with one simple objective, to beat Trump, has become so fractionalized? This party is really on the brink. There's a high probability you have a brokered convention. Think about the fact that...
Wouldn't it be fun, though, once in our lifetime?
Oh, it's going to be awesome. But and it's almost something worth betting on at this point. But in the month of February... With the 4 to 5 primaries and caucuses, only 4% of the total Democratic electoral votes are going to delegates are going to be allocated in February.
Mm-hmm.
So that means 96% are allocated as of Super Tuesday and forward. And because of Bernie Sanders petitioning as a result of the last election, where he believes he was screwed, they are now awarded on a fractional basis.
Mm-hmm.
So all the Super Tuesday states, those are going to be fractional delegates. You have three distinct camps now. You have a kind of conservative, a moderate, and a progressive lane, or you could say two distinct. The third one's a little bit blurry. But the one thing you can count on is there's going to be fractional breakout of delegates going forward. The probability of a brokered convention is really, really high. And Bloomberg is sitting in the Katberg seat right now.
Yep.
You know, it's just kind of playing out that way because, you know, Wall Street doesn't want a Bernie Sanders president. So, you know, I mean, the irony of the Democratic Party is going to be in the hands of a white billionaire.
But why is this, I guess, somewhat so shocking, especially to you guys? Because whenever you have a company, it's like in disarray, or a city, or whatever it is, or a school. Everybody points fingers at all the stuff that's screwed up, right? And they really don't have a solution. They just point fingers and make loud noises. And then all of a sudden, everybody gets in a room, and out of nowhere, one person says, "I hear all you people," and drops a plan in the middle of the table. Doesn't even have to be a very good plan, but if it's the first plan, that's what you call a leader. The other people just talk. And I think maybe Bloomberg, maybe Buttigieg is too young, but right now people are sitting there going, Elizabeth Warren, all she does is talk. I got a plan. There is no solution at all for her other than her to get the hell out of there. I mean, AOC, she's too young to have a plan. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I think at some point people are going to sit. And Bernie, the plan is make the people in Wall Street pay for everything else in the country. Well, Bernie, the money's not there, you idiot. I mean, get your calculator out, and he probably still has to plug his in. But, I mean, it's somewhere, people sit there and go, no, this does not work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so maybe at the end of the day, we might actually get somebody who, and maybe it's Bloomberg, because he does, and if he picks a Kamala Harris or Buttigieg and says, for somebody else, I think both of those people are pretty bright. I just think they're 8 years away.
Well, I think it's more like Kamala Harris or Amy Klobuchar if it's Bloomberg, because
that's what I meant. He cannot go
with Buttigieg.
No, I'm sorry.
he cannot. Well, not. I have Klobuchar in the VP pick on the prediction markets, and you can buy that at 7 cents right now, which is a nice payout.
But to your point, Jeff, about earlier about the broker convention, I'm not sure from a Democratic standpoint that that's a bad idea, because right now, Trump has proven himself to be a master at one-on-one degradation. When he's got one candidate, like he did with Hillary Clinton, to vilify her. But if there's a broker convention till July, he doesn't know where to aim the targets. And it's a big if the Democrats can coalesce around one candidate from July until November, I think it gives them a lot of strength. Now, where that argument really falls apart is if the candidate is anybody except Bernie Sanders, because his followers are so determined that he got screwed in 16 and would get screwed again if he's not the winner, that I think they would stay home or work against a Democratic candidate, especially if it was somebody like Bloomberg, who's so antithetical to what Bernie believes and where he's coming from in the billionaire class.
How does anybody even know what Bernie believes? Anyway, we got to go to a break here, guys. SP Futures up 11, NASDAQ Futures up 44. Bernie, to me, is an independent. I just, why we even should care about him, I don't know. But that's just me. We'll be right back.
Because he's leading.
Yeah, because he's leading. Well, that's the reason.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now. Right now.
Blowing up Base Action Jacks. I'm Tom Al. We have a full studio this morning. We got AV on the board. We have Brendan Cornane here. We have Jeff Joseph from Luckbox Magazine. A lively discussion. These guys are tough. These guys are tough. You can't just lie about an idea and they're not afraid to jump back on you, which is the idea, by the way, because you don't learn anything if people don't criticize back. So I learn from these two dudes every Tuesday. S&P futures, like I said, up 8.25. As if he was up 35, they were up as much as 12 or 13, but they're still up. Dow futures up 98. Individual stocks, Boeing up 353. Somebody must know something in here, Jeff. This thing has been up now how many days in a row? I mean, I think people think that we're going to get this in July, and monopoly if they are, they're just going to raise the prices. I'm thinking at the end of the day, this hit's going to be $20-plus billion. And it must be nice to be a monopolist to take a hit like that and come out swinging, but they can. Over in Europe, DAX up 124.9%. That's higher than before. FTSE same way. We're up 0.8% now, $57. CAC around up 25.2. So we continue to rally a little bit in Europe. Asia, Nikkei down 142.6%. Shanghai up 11.4%. Hang Seng up 342, 1.2%. Bonds, these things are not moving much. 1.58 is the yield on our 10-year. 1 minus 0.39. And Japan has sunk more negative again, minus 0.06. Because they barely made it positive for like a day a few weeks ago. I thought they might hang positive, but no, such luck. Oil up 81 cents, 50.38. Boy, these guys are 50 to 52 now. The range is small and it's low. None of the story between Russia and OPEC getting together to cut. We hear these rumors every other day, but nothing seems to happen. Natural gas, 177. Never thought I'd see that. I'm going to have to make my truck a natural gas Suburban here, for God's sake. RBOB up 1 penny, 153. Gold down 430, 1575. Silver down 5 cents, 1773. Copper 257. Jeff, that means China is not buying a whole lot. And the rumor yesterday was they told Kenya they were going to cut back on some shipments. I don't know if you guys saw that or not.
Yeah.
So that does not mean that production's going up in China. Although the amount of new cases evidently was lower than the day before, so that's a little bit of positive news this morning on the coronavirus. AV, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning. 38 minutes past the hour. 29 degrees right now in Chicago. A mix of sun and clouds during the day. Overcast skies in the evening. No rain or snow expected. The highest of the day is 34 and the lowest 29. 49 degrees currently in Phoenix. Rain showers early in the morning. Switching to a cloudy afternoon. And clearer sky expected by night. Might get lightly windy. Later at night, the high will be 49 and the lowest is 42. The early accidents causing major delays on Eisenhower, east and west. One accident before Mannheim Road.
There you go. Much better.
Thank you. Left lane is blocked. Expect delays up to 20 minutes if you're heading west through Eisenhower. Another accident on Eisenhower again, but eastbound before Racine Avenue. Right lane is blocked, which causing delays up to 20 minutes. And Adams Expressway is slowed down east from Norwich all the way down to I-29, and as well as west from West Monroe to South Stony Island Street. Never heard about it.
It's one of the islands. Like, Stony Island,
like
Blue
very,
Island.
Very south.
Never heard of it.
Stony Island, Blue Island, those are the islands, you know?
Yeah.
Not real islands, but islands, you know?
Well, they're real islands.
Well, Blue Island was an island at one point.
That's what I got.
Stony was
guess.
A rocky shore.
Yeah, but Blue Island was actually an island, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that when the they had the I&M Canal... I'm talking about something from out of the blue. And they decided, Brendan, you might know this. I don't know if you know this, Jeff, but they decided instead of just making it a canal for shipping, that they were actually going to get rid of some drainage.
Sanitary canal.
No, I'm talking about the I&M Canal, which was never designed to be. The one way they put the bad stuff in there and forced it to flow was they dug some kind of a tunnel or a trench or a pipe or something from essentially the Blue Island area, which is higher, and they ran water from there into the canal to force it downstream. But Chicago did a lot of stuff to get rid of a lot of stuff, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
The most amazing...
That's why the people in St. Louis really like us so much, because reversing the river and sending everything down to them.
Well, you know what they say, dilution, dilution, dilution. You know?
Like location, location, yeah, location.
Right. Well, no, this is a something one, our city has that I don't know anybody else ever had, but when Chicago was only 300,000 people, now granted you had stockyards and you had animals there and so forth, and we had tanneries and other kinds of stuff, allegedly we had more, whatever you want to call it, stuff to sanitize than any other city in the world, including London, which was 3 million people. So basically, we had more poop to get rid of than a city 10 times our size. Isn't that? That's something to that's something to put up on the wall, isn't it?
There would be some arguments that the same is true from the political standpoint.
Yes, there would be. we had issues, this is pretty fascinating. On when people used to put the point numbers in for before you had the internet. Did you ever go, Jeff or Brennan, to the Stardust? In Las Vegas, which is now down, of course, but it was a Chicago mob place. Not that anybody doesn't know that.
Well, most of the places at that time in the 60s were mob places.
Well, but that was a Chicago mob place.
Yeah.
And the Flamingo was the New York mob, right? And the Caesars was Kansas City, I believe. And anyway, everybody had their own spot. But what Tony Spilotro did was essentially, was to move the sports gambling out there so all the bookies could lay off their business. So it was the Stardust in the Fremont downtown is kind of what started it. So there was this little room next to the Stardust, you know, race and sports book and all that stuff. And they would go, remember the old computer stuff with the holes in the side? On Sunday night, they would take all the stats from all the games, what the halfbacks did and running back, halfback. And they would just hang them on the wall by thumbtacks. And all these people would pile in there, and that's where your stats were. And there was, at 6:30 on Sunday night, there was no Sunday night game, even before the Monday Night Football, they would put the odds on for next week. And it was a lady back in the, before there, you know, was a men-dominated world, a lady did that. She was put the first number on every game for the next week. Every night at 6:30 in the Stardust that would come on, and everybody else would pick it up. And if she screwed up on a game, of course, everybody would run to push money on one side and immediately would move. So it's very similar. I mean, the pattern is exactly what you're talking about and the political stuff. And, but I just wonder how often now when somebody's moves, like, Buttigieg went from 28 to 40, obviously some other people went down a combination of 12, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're saying it was Biden and Warren that got whacked the worst.
Yeah. It's a really active market. I'm just pulling it up right now, predicted for the Democratic nominee market. There were 99.6 million shares traded to date.
Wow.
So when you think about that being a binary option market, that means that $200 million is traded.
What's the...
No, it means that $50 million has transacted. Binary option, there has to be two sides of both.
So well, it's still one trade.
Right, but there's got to be both sides of it. Well, no, you're right. So it's still one trade. Yeah.
The thing is issued by, an option would be issued by OCC. So if I buy 100 shares from, 100 options from somebody, it's not 200, it's not me and him, it's just 100.
That's right. But that's a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
80 cans on this market right now.
How wide is the spread?
They're pretty narrow as a result of that volume and liquidity. They're about 1 cent.
Really? Well, that's great.
Yeah, the platform's kind of rich. They take, 10% out on a profitable trade. That's their fee.
How do you do that?
So if you, like, I bought, I'll take a look right now. I bought...
What do they care if you make money?
Well, because they're a non-for-profit, so they can make money. It's actually, this is...
So they don't charge, you know, a penny a contract.
That's right. Yeah, it's
they only charge if you win.
They take 10% of the profits.
Right.
Right.
That's a little weird.
Yes. Yeah, it is a little weird. But it's a vibrant market. Lots and lots of traders on it. And some of these traders are making a lot of money. They're day trading, a couple hundred contracts a day. You know.
So if I buy some IBM and I hold it for 30 years and I lose, I never pay to exchange or to broker? That sounds like an odd game.
Well, this is just politics, so there's no security.
Plus, they know it's ending in such and such a date.
That's
one
right.
of the things I find really interesting on this website is that... Bloomberg winning at least one primary, 58 cents for yes, 42 for no. Mm-hmm. So 58% of the people think he's going to win at least one of the primary outright.
Right. Yeah. and you can buy yes or no shares. So it's almost like you have put or call options.
Well, I bet he wins New York.
Well, possibly.
That's interesting. I don't know.
Why wouldn't he win Connecticut and a lot of those places? Or wouldn't he win Illinois?
When you look at New England, you've got both Sanders and Warren up there who are locals up there.
I think
Sanders can't even win Massachusetts.
I'm going to say I think Warren is she's cooked.
She is toast.
Yeah, I think she's plateaued and is on her way down.
And to answer your question, the market has Bernie Sanders at 52 cents and Michael Bloomberg at 39 cents
in New York.
In the New York primary, so it's still Bernie's race. And Biden down 9%.
I don't see how.
I think the irony is that Biden is out at this point.
I think he is too.
Yeah.
I don't think he was ever that strong to begin with.
I don't either. And he kept, but I think, you know, what he kept saying was, I'm the one who can beat Trump, and I have the support of the African-American community. And I'm not so sure that he did. I think name recognition alone gave him the first crack at the African-American vote. But when you start looking at him, he wasn't a strong candidate. And I think others will coalesce some of the vote. Or, unfortunately, the African-Americans will stay home. Right. And Biden's mistake was saying that I can win the black vote, and you can't win without them. And I think it's true that a Democratic candidate cannot win without strong support from the African-American community. But the African-American community alone will not elect the Democratic candidate as president.
Right.
Even if you were to get a vote from every single man, woman, and child of African-American ancestry in the United States, that's less than 20% of the country. And that, I'm not talking about electors or people who show up. I'm talking about just the general population numbers.
Well, the Quinnipiac poll that came out 2 days ago said that Biden did have the majority of support a month ago of the African-American community.
But it dropped.
It dropped almost by 50%.
Yeah.
And the unlikely recipient of that has been Michael Bloomberg,
mm-hmm. right.
according to Quinnipiac.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I find really interesting.
Yeah.
Well, it just shows you the power of money.
Well, the power of money, but also
money.
He hasn't been questioned about some of the things like stop and frisk.
Why do you think that's such a big problem?
Why do I think it's such a big problem?
Yeah.
Well, that's one thing, but the other thing that's also a big problem with him is things like the nanny tax. Remember, he was really big about the tax in New York on soda. And look what happened here in Chicago in Cook County with Toni Prekwick when she imposed that.
Did he actually do it, though, or he just
liked
it?
No, he did it in New York. And he threw a lot of money to Cook County to support it here. But he was very big on reducing the size of super gulps and things like that in New York City to say, sugar's bad for you, so we're going to stop you from the choice of having big gulps and things like that.
How did he support that here in Chicago?
He threw money to support that to allow the candidates to vote, Cook County Board candidates.
Right, he did something.
To support that showed that it was really more popular than it was. And it turned out, especially in the poorer communities and the African-American communities on the south and west side, there was a big pushback on the soda tax.
It's a regressive tax.
Yeah, it is.
Well, the idea of you're helping me by taxing me, that's starting to become like a fart in church. I mean, we're past that. I mean,
right. But my point is that Bloomberg's got a couple of these other things, too, like stop and frisk, about flooding a lot of police presence in poorer communities to stop crime.
What's wrong with either one of those?
But you know, what happened in New York was that when he flooded it, there was profiling of the people just walking down the street where they would throw them up against a police car and frisk them or arrest them for something that was very, very minor. So he was very unpopular. My understanding is he was very unpopular in the black community in New York because of some of his policies. And those are two examples, the stop and frisk and the flooding of the police as one element. The nanny tax on soda was another one. And, you know, if he's going to impose those types of things in New York, would he try to do the same thing by executive order as president? I mean, it's ripe for an advertisement from Trump in the general election. I will say, however, that the Bloomberg advertisements that I've seen are very effective at really getting under the skin of Donald Trump and really highlighting. I mean, he's got a tremendous
ad campaign going?
Yep. I'd say effective and deceptive. It's funny you mentioned that because last night I saw on CNN a Bloomberg ad that aired that used Obama's voiceover on the front end and mm-hmm. on the back end, and it appeared like an Obama endorsement of Bloomberg.
Right.
It was Obama introducing him at yep. some public event years mm-hmm. back, and he acknowledged what a great supporter he's been
mm-hmm.
and his leadership, etc. And if you're watching it in a vacuum, this appeared to be the endorsement that Biden didn't get.
Right.
Right. It's mm-hmm. a very effective ad. Deceptive, but effective.
And I'm not surprised that Biden did not get an Obama endorsement.
Right. Yep.
I'm still fixating on this. I know that the stop and frisk is a bad term in an awful lot of areas, but I also know that people in Chicago would die for the police record in New York. Compared to here.
Well, they would die for any form of police engagement at
right.
all in the streets.
So we've decided we're not going to have any police engagement.
Well, that's the ACLU made that decision.
They did.
Traveling with, speaking to people who've traveled with Chicago police in their cars, explaining why, doing stories that because of the ACLU requirement as to when you engage with somebody, the forms that you have to fill out, just at simple engagement, yep. Have prevented anybody from talking to anybody.
Yep.
So there's no prophylactic policing going on.
Well, I mean, the issue I have with that is, if I decide that all of a sudden I'm too afraid, thin-skinned, whatever I am, if I'm going to come to work and not trade for any of my people, I think I should stop charging them. Don't you think? If I'm going to go to work as a policeman, and I'm not going to do anything policemen normally do, I think I should stop getting paid.
I don't know. That's easy to say. Let's go back to your metaphor and say if every week you had a new arbitration client case
yeah.
coming at you for trading or misappropriation or not being
yeah.
a proper fiduciary, you would lose interest in your clients
right away. Right. What I'm saying is there are people here that are state police, city police, that are involved in traffic. I'll use that for a term. You can drive the entire length of the expressways here, and you never see a soul. Well, they're someplace. Where are they? Are they at lunch? Are they in a restaurant? Are they holed up in a station? At some point, you don't need them. I'm just saying, at some point, you don't need them. And it's, I don't know why everybody debates me on this. My girlfriend does too. At some point, here's what policemen do all day. If you're not going to do it, why am I paying you? It's your call, right?
Well, they're not doing traditional on the street police work, and certainly, what they are doing is being a fundraising mechanism. They have their quotas, and they mm-hmm. are out writing tickets. So they.
I'm not talking about parking tickets. You're not going to kill me by parking in a parking place.
Yeah,
but you might by going 125 down to Stevenson.
Yeah, except that instead you're not going to go 125 down to Stevenson because rush hour traffic means you're more likely to go 1.25 instead of 125.
Right.
But and second of all, the highways like the Dan Ryan, the Kennedy, etc., are to be monitored by the Illinois State Police, not the Chicago Police. But as far as revenue generating, that really is the purpose of things like red light cameras that are taking away the duties of the police officer sitting on a corner watching somebody go through a light or blocking the intersection through gridlock.
Yeah, and very effectively.
You can tell
which
them,
ideally
you can tell
should
them
leave them more time for policing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm just saying, when I was young, we went out and we bought a boat. God, what a horrible thing this was, guys. We bought a 1936 Chris Craft speedboat.
Ooh.
And for like $400. So two of my buddies and I, we each ponied up to 133.33 and we bought this thing. So we way up on Western Avenue, we hook it to the back of the car and off we go. Well, of course, there's no title on a boat, but there's a license on a trailer, right? So the trailer, of course, didn't have a license because we just bought the damn thing. So we'd go down Western Avenue, we got stopped three times by the police. This guy's out, noticed we never put a license on the trailer. Every guy was nice as pie. Hey guys, you don't have a license on your trailer. Officer, we just bought the boat. Here's our bill of sale, heading right to the Secretary of State's office. Man, that's a great boat. You guys enjoy it. Be careful. Have a nice day. they were just doing. Now you're telling me you can drive around now with an expired plate, 100 miles an hour. The chance of you getting pulled over are 1 in 1,000. What's changed? I mean, what's changed is nobody cares. I mean, it doesn't surprise me that we're seeing stuff happen here.
I don't know, and I don't care.
Yeah, well, but okay. Wait, I mean, at some point here, we have to find a way to reengage, because you have people walking around all these neighborhoods now. They're causing problems. There's shoplifting on Michigan Avenue. Now we have a lady who says she's not going to prosecute shoplifting. Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting if I'm a retailer.
So they're, you know, I mean, what you're making an appeal to, which worked, was the broken window theory in New
right.
York.
That's right.
What are the chances of that coming to happening again?
Well, but then you end up having people leaving. You have people becoming vigilantes. You have people doing. I'd rather have the police do their job than have 48,000 people run around concealed carry.
Well, it also comes around to the question of what are the immediate priorities and what are the resources that you have, and you know. Both Emmanuel and I think Lori Lightfoot are thinking about flooding certain parts of the city with police to cut down on gun violence. But remember how that went awry back in the 90s when police were flooded into zones, the special gang units, and how they went sideways by overusing their power. It was very effective for a while to increase the arrests and at least temporarily to cut down on violence, but then you found out that the cops were taking some of the drugs and framing people.
Well, sure they are.
And when you look at the long-term effects, I mean, there was an article in the paper today where another city policeman's actions are costing $10 million in a settlement. In the last 10 years, there's been something like over $700 million of payouts from the city of Chicago for bad police activity. Now, where I think that happened has an effect, the police are reluctant to engage, in addition to the fact that in the communities, the community members are reluctant to engage with the police to say what's going on because they don't know who to trust.
Every policeman, and I'll include probably my dad, who I think was one of the straightest people walking, my mother tells me, his mother will always say that about somebody's dad, but I'm guessing that even in his day, if I could get him up out of the grave, he could probably name five people that should have been policemen.
Again, oh, absolutely.
And yet never told on them. My stepfather's father was one. They used to be, you might remember this, Brent. They used to have a Chicago Park District police.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was one of those guys. And then they banned them, not banned them, they got rid of those guys and made them all Chicago police.
Mm-hmm.
So his last 10 years of his, he'd tell me, he goes, there were guys in the squad car with me. I just said, you stay in the car, I'll make the call.
Mm-hmm.
Because these guys couldn't walk through somebody's house without grabbing a bottle of booze or something.
Yeah.
And he goes, I just didn't want any part of it. He said, well, while you're with me, you can't be doing that because I'm not going down with you. Mm-hmm. I'll just make the call, sit here in the car. The guy'd go, that's the way you feel, I'll sit right here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there needs to be a change, Brendan. There needs to be, it's costing too much money.
Well, I remember looking at some of the guys in high school. They were real jerks and borderline, always getting in trouble. And you didn't know if they were going to be in jail or become a cop.
Right, absolutely.
They could go either way. And the fact that they became a cop didn't mean that they wouldn't wind up in jail eventually.
Well, one of the same sort of knuckleheads.
You say the same about governors.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Get a load of this. I go out and I'm watching a softball game, and one of the guys, I won't say his name, he's probably still a cop. I don't know, he's all my age, he's got to be retired. He's sitting there with the squad car watching a softball game. And I didn't really like the guy, but I'm talking to him. I see a flat tire in a squad car. And I go, seen a problem with that tire? Well, yeah, I mean, the guys are coming out here to fix it. I called whatever, the fleet patrol, and he said, there'll be a couple hours. I get to watch games for a couple hours. I said, what happened to the tire? Well, I let the air out of it. Okay. But all right, let's talk about the luck box. What do you guys got going? Is this the Chinese issue?
It is the Chinese issue, and boy, I wish we had an opportunity to talk about it. It's a hard-hitting issue.
We'll talk for a minute, and we'll have you back.
We are looking at all the issues. It's called the stealth war with China, and we have already been dealing with some of the fear that people have of the Chinese Communist Party. I will only say this, and I can't get too much into detail. Since the magazine is free in digital format, go to getluckbox.com, getluckbox.com.
We have an ad on the site, right?
And register to get it, because we just pulled it off of all newsstands nationwide because of a story we wrote about a Chinese American that was a benign story, but because it was in the context of some hard-hitting investigative pieces on China, including the treatment of Muslims and the manner in which they keep bad accounting on publicly traded Chinese listed stocks that are listed in the U.S. Because of some of the tough articles that we wrote, this woman is in fear for her mother's life. She feels the CCP will either intern her, arrest her, or perhaps even kill her. We didn't want to do it, but we pulled all the print newsstands off, and we eliminated that story from the digital edition, so she's now anonymous. But it was because of the power of the other stories that were written around that. So if you go to getluckbox.com,
hey,
you can register for the digital
edition. If you roll out of bed in time Thursday morning, I'd love to have you call in for 10 minutes or 15 minutes while Lou is here. You guys, I promise not to talk. You guys, you should talk about that.
Sure. Tell the story a little bit more.
Yeah, because that's unbelievable. And he'll ask much better questions than I will.
It was really hard. It's a great cover. It's Uncle Sam standing in front of the tanks of Tiananmen Square. And, wow. But the magazine will still publish, just not in print, because we decided to eat the cost and protect what this woman's
all right, we got to hear more about this story. All right, yeah. Bud. S&P Futures up 12. NASDAQ Futures up 49. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.